Hi, I'm Keith Knoger. So yeah, I've been at SRA Yelp 2.5 years and been there 4 years total. And in that time, a lot has changed. It's been pretty dramatic. So if you're unfamiliar with Yelp, we're a US-based website and also a mobile app for finding your favorite local businesses and then saying whatever you want about them. We've been around 10 years now, and there's a bunch of other numbers that you can read. So when I first joined the SRE team, our infrastructure was full of bears. Bear metal, that is. Yeah. There's still time. You can. It was various states. Some of them released. Some of them we touched ourselves. But all of it, you know, was the fun you get when you start from a pixie boot. And this is hard. There are a lot of problems involved in managing your own hardware. Everything we did was slow. Like, we could not get a box up really quickly. We were at the point where, like, we were spending a lot of our time on hardware, but we weren't spending all of our time, so it didn't quite yet make sense to just get a person dedicated to that. We kept telling the search team, we're going to need more weeks lead time if you want to get boxes from us. You can't keep asking for things, you know, only 2 weeks in advance. We're not gods. What do you do when you have this problem? Because also, we were trying to move from a big monolithic web app to service-based infrastructure, and services are very hardware-hungry. And while it's terrible to develop on that monolithic web app, it's kind of nice to operate it. You have your one thing, you run it on your one type of server, everything is good. Suddenly, no one knows what hardware they need, but they know they need a lot of it. So what do you do in this situation? Pay someone else. There is a place where you can go and say, I need a server, and they give you a server. And you say, I need 100 servers, and they give you 100 servers. And you say, wait, I didn't want that, I wanted more RAM. And you know what? You can change your mind on the fly. So the call came out, you know, it came on from on high, saying, look, here's the credit card. Go into Amazon, do whatever it needs to take to get us developing quickly. So it's a bit of a lie when I said everything was bare metal. We had already been using Amazon for S3 storage and EMR for Hadoop jobs, but we hadn't really integrated EC2 in any way. And so now, if you've read the top of the title, how did this go? Obviously, we went ahead and did this. And it's been a rousing success. In the past years, now we have 3 times as many nodes running in EC2 as we have physical servers. 30% of our production traffic comes straight from EC2, and we could easily make that number much larger whenever you want to. And the real big win is that when someone comes and asks for a server, you say, sure, here's one, here's 10. How many do you need? Developers get what they need as soon as they need it. And yet, we haven't spun up an entirely new infrastructure in AWS. Everything is internet-worked. Our data center servers still participate. Everything runs the same public code. We haven't sacrificed architectural coherency. If we ever get tired of paying our AWS bill, we could easily port this all back into our own data center. So this is great. We're living now the cloud dream of hot and cold running instances. So also, if you read the talk title, you might have noticed this other funny little word, kata. What is kata? Kata comes from the Japanese arts, especially the martial arts. And a kata is a kind of formalized routine that you work through. The idea is you practice a routine like every day, every week. You build up muscle memory until all the parts of it just feel smooth and flow freely. This term has also become an English loanword. You're probably most familiar with it through codekata.com. This was introduced by one of the guys who co-authored the Pragmatic Programmer. And codekata is a small little exercises that you're supposed to work through to hone your skills and become a softer craftsman. So what do we say when we're talking about kata in the infrastructure? Well, first of all, it's probably not actually going to be a little practice thing. Because let's face it, whatever procedure you have that you're repeating, bringing up instances, migrating your database masters, it's way too fiddly for you to just sit down and do it as practice. Plus, you know, we have to deliver. You can't say, oh, no, I know the database master needs failing over, but let me practice. Two more weeks. Come back. Now, eventually, maybe you'll get these small enough and quick enough that you can actually just do it as practice. But when you're starting out, just pick something you're going to be repeating a lot. And so also, we don't care about becoming an operational craftsperson. Because if one person on your team gets really good at launching instances, makes the most beautiful instances ever. We call that bus factor. You know, I hope that person is around every time you need that task done. No, we care about the slowest person on our team. We care that every single person can achieve this. And we all have that one teammate, the one who is kind of slow, not a great independent thinker, but hard worker, produces good results. We call that the computer. But before you can start any of this, you need a procedure. You know, if the past five times someone's brought up an instance and they just did it in their own five ways and there's no one true way of doing anything, there's no shared document, you don't have a procedure. You have five cowboys launching instances. So you need to figure out what you're doing. Maybe this is your first time doing it, but you need to sit down, you need to write out how you're doing it, and seriously write down everything. Every little thing that you stumble on, someone else is going to have to stumble on and hack around later too, and you've just wasted both your time. That said, writing down everything is really hard and tedious, and you're not going to do it. So still, anything you write down is better than nothing. I wish I could have gotten a picture we had. We once had a physical piece of paper for how to bring up a Jenkins cluster, which is terrible, but is much better than not having that piece of paper. So now we've got a procedure. Now we can actually call this a kata. Now we can work on this, and now we can talk about honing our infrastructural skills. Now we can talk about building muscle memory in the infrastructure. And really, like I said, we're focused on getting the whole team sped up. So the best way to do this is not to you practice. You sit down, write the procedure, get it going well, and then turn around, hand it to someone else on your team, and say, hey, do this. We did this once we got good at launching web servers. You know, we're like reasonably proficient, so it wasn't just a giant pile of hacks. We're like, okay, hey, new guy, guess what you get to do? And that taught us a lot about a few issues we still had. And so eventually, this becomes effortless. This becomes like, you know, ingrained in our infrastructural muscles. That's a single command. That there's no longer a separation between intent and action. I figure out what I want to do. I put in the parameters to the simple little script, to the web form. I hit enter, and it just happens. No work on my part. Cool. So we're done, right? We've automated it. Well, no. I'm sure you've all been in the spot where someone says, oh, hey, go do this task. Here's the script to run it. Links to the docs. You think, oh, cool. You read up on them. You're like, cool. You get your parameters in. You go enter, and it crashes. And you're like, and they're just like, I don't know, it worked for me last month. So, you know, everything's always breaking. Edge cases are by the definition on the edge. If they happened all the time, they wouldn't be edge cases, they'd just be the normal case. So this is the part where you actually can practice. This is the part where you can sit down and say, hey, we're gonna block in an hour, make sure we can still do this. You know, we're gonna practice a failover. We're gonna practice bringing up an instance. We're gonna do a little more games with the database. You know, make sure you keep honed. Musicians don't stop practicing just because they did one good concert. So when you've truly mastered this is when this is just something that gets invoked automatically all the time, every day. It's been running for a year. You know, if you went to the Facebook talk yesterday about how they failed over MySQL, they've mastered that. The rest of us probably haven't. So let's switch up gears and talk about how this all applied to the past 2 years and how we managed to get ourselves freed from the strictures of hardware and free to have instances whenever we want. So when we first started, what do you do in first start? You find someone else who has done this and you learn from them. In that case, Netflix has been, you know, they spent their whole life in the cloud. They know AWS in and out. So we looked at what they'd done. And Netflix have written this thing called Asgard. It's the kind of their implementation of the AWS command console. But plus, it's got a whole application deployment infrastructure built on top of it. So we spun that up. We spun up Packer from HashiCorp, which allowed us to run Puppet, put our service onto an image, and then stick that image in Asgard and have it deployed. And this was a success in that it allowed us to pull out the entire ads framework from our infrastructure and launch a huge new ad service entirely in AWS, and thus the ads team was unburdened. And if you want any team to be unburdened to iterate as fast as they want to, it's your ads team, unless some of you are lucky enough not to work for an advertising company. But this brings us to our first kata we can use. Build a machine image. This one isn't that hard. Your answer could be really simple. Oh, I go and I get the latest Ubuntu AMI, I get the latest Amazon Linux AMI. But maybe your answer is kind of sad of like, oh, I don't know, this one team member spun up this thing and then apt-get installed a bunch of things and then saved it to an image and yeah, well, you know, we might make that again one day. So yeah, I mean, you need to be able to do this. You need machine images if you want to launch an instance. Like I said, Packer from HashiCorp is great for doing this. And mastery in this is that when you, you know, every time you make a commit, images just get built and distributed. We have this set up such that whenever we commit to our Puppet repo and push to origin, not only do all the masters get updated with the code and the clients start running the new Puppet code, but we also bake a new, we call it the generic AMI, that has like all the latest and greatest. So new instances also start with all their bugs fixed. But the problem with Asgard is that it doesn't look like anything else we have in our infrastructure. You know, not most of our infrastructure is not an idealized Golden Image Netflix application. It just didn't play well. And really, what we wanted to really do was just run our Puppet code on EC2 nodes and have everything look the same, and make sure we could do everything we could do in the data center in Amazon. So our new goal became, you know, Git as a proof of concept and also to give us more capacity. Let's get an entire independent production stack up and running in the cloud. So that brings us to our next kata. Set up your entire stack, and then do it again, and then do it again. I'm sure most of us can't do that. Raise your hand if you think you just tear down your whole stack and then set it up. All right, that guy, he's got it down. You should be up here talking. Yeah, this is what we would love to do. This is what we're working on. This is what we're iterating and trying to perfect and trying to hone, but this is the big one. So let's start smaller. Let's just get a web server up and running, okay? You know, this should be, web servers are pretty easy. They're usually stateless. You know, they just have to list on one port. You get up and going. So that's where we started. We just got a single web server up and running. We hacked everything else it needed to work on the nearby data center. You know, it lived in that load balancer. It got all its backends from there. So basically, it just looked like any other web server, just with a worse ping. But even doing this suggests many procedures that we are going to be repeating a lot, and thus we should get really good at this if we want to take advantage of the benefits of having on-demand hardware. So, you know, first you have to get your instance running, and then you have to get your instance running your code. And so, get an instance running. This, it's not hard to have this be a single command, because it comes as a single command. Or I hear it's like four clicks through the Amazon console. I don't know. I don't go there. But it's kind of like, technically it's a single command, except there's all these magic numbers that you have to get from somewhere and look up. It's kind of tedious. And there's all this other stuff that like boilerplate, and let's not even get into the whole JSON you have to write just to get your drives mounted. So quickly you'll find yourself wrapping this in a script that, you know, takes care of the normal stuff. You know, we had our many little iterations of bash scripts that wrapped this. We went a little further, and we just wrote something against the Python API that encoded kind of all our smarts, all our conventions. Clops, the smart tool with the stupid name, knows how to pull our latest AMI straight from Jenkins. It knows about all your credentials. It knows about all the normal settings. It knows about our tagging conventions. So this has been really nice. This allowed people to get hardware really quickly. I would open source this, but you'd find this all useless because you don't have our infrastructure. It's that tied. Okay, so we've got a server that boots. Next, we need to get running our code. Now, unless you've spent like your entire company life in Heroku, you're probably already pretty good at this. Like, you know how to take a server and turn it into something you can use. So hopefully, I don't need to explain this too much. The one difference might be that we had like our imager injecting some details about the environment, where it is in Amazon. Your instance comes up, last it knew is being baked in dev. It's very confused about where it is, and you have to make sure everything can bootstrap from the DHCP information it gets. Yeah, so we've done a web server. Let's just now do a database. Let's do a load balancer. Each of these is maybe its own special thing. Each of these is maybe not its own special thing because your provisioning takes care of it. And you just chip away at this. This is not easy. Like, this took us better part of 2 years as we relearned how to launch every single type of instance and bring it up. But it's something you can, just chew on. You can take small little things off, work on them until they work, and eventually, at the end of the road, you will have an independent infrastructure that can run entirely separate of your own data center. And yeah, as you're doing this, you're going to be doing a lot of hacks. You're going to be rediscovering a lot of things. Write them down so that you don't have to rediscover them next time. Cool, so now we can get servers up and running and running our code. And this is where you discover that in your old clunky application that it was never prepared for this sort of hardware flexibility. That everything knows about everything else through these stupid statically defined lists. And so you've got to now teach your infrastructure how to learn about everything else. This is, it's 2015. This is the year of service configuration. Really, it was probably 2013, or if you Google, like 2005. So we need to get our instances into production. This is your next little kata to iterate on. How can you easily, smoothly take an instance and get it serving your production traffic? You need to get it into monitoring. You need to get in load balancers. You need to get it anywhere else that you have a stupid, statically defined list. In 2013, everything we had was static. And it was terrible, but we worked on it. For monitoring, we had Nagios, and there are many, many, many hacks to get Nagios to dynamically detect instances, but they're all hacks. Nagios is not like architected for this. So we started playing with Sensu, which is really cool, and is architected for nodes just coming, disappearing, saying, hey, I'm here, please monitor me. So now monitoring is just a Puppet type. You just say, on this box, please check mem. You get access to all your fun Puppet facts. It's pretty great. Now getting stuff into monitoring is just part of provisioning it. There's really no more work to be done here. Same with load balancing. When we started, we had this script. It was a DSL, but unlike every other DSL, it wasn't written in Ruby. It was written in Python, so I'm sure you can all imagine kind of how bad it is. And you had to update the script, and you had to run all the load balancers and reload them all. It was terrible and tedious and one of the worst parts of our infrastructure to deal with. So around this time, we're realizing we need to get a zookeeper up and running and get everything registering that and doing service registration as you do. We're having internal debates about what that should look like. And Airbnb comes along and open sources this thing called SmartStack, which I think doesn't nearly get enough love and still needs its own logo, although knowing Airbnb, we'll see how that ever turns out. Yeah. SmartStack's really cool in that it's two little Ruby demons, one which does health checks against your service, registers them in Zookeeper, and the other half pulls all that registration information out and builds an HAProxy config with it. And this is really cool because we already have stuff doing health checks and going through HAProxy, so none of the services need to know that we just switched up everything on them and everything is suddenly dynamic. This has also been really cool. So now we can have a web just come up. Yeah, so these days, like, I could have launched a web at the start of this talk and it would be in production right now serving traffic with me having done nothing in between there. What was really cool in all this is like the things that just sort of happened while all this is going on. While we're like chewing away at our data center, the recent engineering team starts using EC2 instances to supplement their build cluster because we're always getting more interns, we're always trying to run more tests. But they said, and we've long hated the build cluster applications, so they said, hey, can we do something better? And they said yes. And in like no time at all, they sat down, they knocked out this new test framework. It runs on top of Marathon and Mesos. It's all in EC2. You know, this is the idealized cloud application. It handles failures. It spins up and down nodes as it needs them. It doesn't care at all that nodes are coming and going. So now it's just a lot easier to operate. It also cut test times in half. So yeah, I was just like, wow, they have blown away everything we're doing. I want one of those. And the cool thing about running all your tests in EC2 is you can now tell someone how long or how much money it costs to do a test run, and then that person can cry. So I really wish I could give you a link to Siegel's open source or even some talks or blog posts about it, but we're a little behind in kind of our publicizing and open sourcing. But we do plan to be talking about this more and hopefully get it out into people's hands. So as we kind of move into the present time and look at our future, we've started playing with HashiCorp's Terraform, which is really cool. It's similar to Amazon's CloudFormation. What they'll let you do is write down declaratively your entire stack. This is how we're going to be able to set up and tear down our entire stack in a day, if we ever are capable of that. So you say, you know, I want these 5 web instances and connect them to this load balancer and put them all in this subnet and even spin up the subnet. So you just say what you want, and then you run it. You say Terraform apply. It says, OK, I'm going to do all these changes to make the current state look like the new state. And it's got the most fun command, Terraform destroy. Seriously, this is like my favorite command right now. I want to put it on like a little light switch. So just as you're leaving the office, click. So yeah. So, you know, find what you're going to be repeating. Get everyone out there on the same page. You know, develop procedures, because you're going to be doing these things anyways. And so you might as well take each iteration and treat it as a learning exercise. You know, kind of the heart of kata is the idea that you just need to slow down, focus, learn these things, practice these things until you become good. Of course, you didn't need a silly foreign buzzword to tell you this. These are good ideas anyways. And you know, if you think that your infrastructure is crusty and terrible and you wish that everything could be more dynamic and you just bring up and down everything and your operational life is easy, you can. It's not easy work. It's a lot of focus. But you know, you can get there. We got there. It's really awesome. There's so much I've glossed over because it's a short talk. But if you want, you can hit me up afterwards. No, yeah. Seriously, write it down. That stupid hack you did, write it down, put it somewhere, write it on a piece of paper, just write it down.
Don't lose the paper either.
Okay, so that's all I have.
So there's got to be some questions.
Yeah.
Who's first to?
Is it on?
Sorry about that.
On. Okay. How come you guys chose to use Packer versus Emanator?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't remember that was like 2 years ago, so I don't remember the technical decision making there. Packer we also use for other stuff. It works really well with running, you know, basing your builds off Puppet, because we're very heavily Puppet. If Emanator works for you, like, that works.
I'm asking is it just seems like a tighter integration between Emanator and the other Netflix tooling as well with Asgard.
Asgard is being heavily deprecated. The Asgard stuff looks nothing else like our other things, and so it's always breaking because we'll roll out a change for infrastructure and then go, oh crap, also the Asgard nodes need to have their little Bootstrap script updated. The Asgard taught us a lot about we don't want to build a separate cloud infrastructure. We're not Netflix. We should try to make everything, we should try to do it the Yelp way.
Okay, any other questions?
Good thing it's soft.
So what is the happy ending of this? Like, did you actually move all of the infrastructure on the cloud and you're happy with it? Or do you still keep something bare metal for some reason and why?
No, yeah, so no, we're entirely like hybrid now. Like 70% of our traffic still comes out of bare metal data centers. You know, bare metal is still much more cost effective. It's the best way to kind of like provide your baseline capacity. But now, whenever we can integrate any cloud resource we want on top of that. So like, it's great for testing new applications. It's great for figuring out what your hardware needs are. It's really great in that Amazon has presence all over the world. So like, by the time you're still working on contract negotiations with a cage, you know, in the EU, I could have an entire production stack up there and running in Amazon. So this allows us to quickly kind of expand our presence. So yeah, it's truly the hybrid life. It's kind of really cool in that you get mostly the best of both worlds, you pay some of the costs of both worlds. But we're really happy with where we are right now.
Thank you.
Okay, just behind you.
So you talked a lot about writing everything down. And we have a document that's about 4 pages long that has everything written down. And it has, you know, comments off to the side. I'm not sure that we really need to do this and blah, blah, blah. And it's a giant mess. It's better, as you said, to have it than to not have it. But do you have any ideas about how to write things down in a way that you would kind of do as if you were writing code? Like, do you do comment reviews or document reviews? Or how do you manage that?
I mean, ours is the similar mess. We've got the big kind of build doc of, that we wrote up while we were building out this first production data center. And it's also a big Google doc full of comments, kind of like, do we need to do this? Can we do this? I don't have any great solutions for that. I mean, the best way to write down things as code is as code. Like, that's the eventual goal here, but writing things down as code is very tedious and nitpicky and finicky. So yeah, really the thing is just as you go through and do the build again, leave those comments, kind of figure out, you know, maybe stop and like, this is part of practicing, like if you hit a point but it's kind of rough and you're not sure, like slow down, work on it, like be like, I'm not sure if we need this, maybe take the time to go, okay, we don't need it, or oh yeah, that's why we need it. But yeah, I don't have any magic solutions there. Just writing things down is hard enough.
Okay.
So as far as I can see, and my experience with the cloud is that cloud is really a mindset. A lot of the stuff that you do with the cloud, you could actually do with hardware. And in fact, we did. And you can even see it in OpenStack, where they now have support for provisioning through the OpenStack console bare metal machines. So my question is, has working with the cloud changed the way you work with hardware?
It kind of has a little bit. We love to be able to treat our hardware, sort of like OpenStack, or just at least like a big kind of fungible pool that you can just pull off of. And we're focusing, like, you know, I put a quick blurb up there about Marathon, which we're using for our testing now, but we're also trying to use that for more of our services so that every node is just a Marathon node, and services get scheduled out onto those, Mesos. Mesos is the scheduling framework. Marathon is the thing that runs long-lived tasks on top of it. We are trying to treat our data center more as its own little cloud. We're still working on that. But we would love to have everything kind of work this way.
Okay, we got time for one or two more questions?
Way up there.
Right behind you.
Four.
So this is an answer rather than a question. It's related to how do you improve the doc? So I've seen this several times where our docs said things like, find a similar config file, copy and edit appropriately. Well, I'm a newbie. Where do I find a similar config file to start with, and what edits should I make? And my approach to this has been, anything that you can convert into a cut and pastable shell command, do. It's going to take a bit of work, but you'll find that after one pass through, it's reasonably okay. And then you're also halfway towards writing a shell script, which is then the basis of a tool that you can now run, and it's a one command rather than work your way through a to-do list.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I've done several of those conversions as well, where it's like, all right, yeah, just fill in the values, and okay, yeah, you've got a document full of shell command now. Yeah. That's almost a script.
Yeah.
Any more?
Any more questions?
Oh.
Yeah, one more.
It's so much nicer to turn up virtual machines than deal with real hardware, but with real hardware, people might get nervous if they're told to throw away all the real hardware, while with virtual machines, there might be a bug that causes stuff like this. So what's the limit of automation that you see, or where you get nervous? Like, it's good if people can create a few more extra instances or remove a few, but where you would have want to have safety checks to avoid disasters, like throwing away everything and stuff like that?
I don't know. I don't think we've kind of hit that limit yet, because we're not quite there yet, where stuff is just automatically getting torn down a lot. That's still kind of a more manual action. You know, we'd love to be in the place where everything just kind of turns up and scales down, but we haven't quite gotten there yet, so we haven't gotten bit by that yet. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the scary things. As you build bigger hammers, you hit yourself in the toe much harder. Like with some of the service registration we've been doing, we got a few things wrong, and suddenly everything's deregistering itself and had some very near outages from that. So yeah, I don't know where the limit is there. Like, I mean, it's something you eventually kind of want to do or have to do. So just do it carefully, do it slowly.
Okay, Keith, right. Thank you.
Thanks.